And you're on the Postman Show with the care of www.thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And our special guest today is Jeff Phillips. Jeff, let's just dive straight into it. Let's introduce yourself, sir. Explain the show that you do and what your focus is.
My background is in interdisciplinary science and physics and zoology and psychology. And when I was in college, I first was going to be an astronomer, but then I decided to become a psychiatrist. But then the universe decided that I should just go crazy instead, and here I am. But one of the most influential things that's happened in my life was when I read the writings of a scientist named Dr. John C. Lilly, who was doing communication work with dolphins. I was turned on to his writings by my physics lab instructor, and it really rung a very deep chord in me. And I ended up moving to California a couple of years later and getting involved with his dolphin communication group. And ever since then, they've been my favorite beings on this planet. And I quickly realized from that it's not cool to keep them captive for any reason, for any length of time. So ever since then, that they've been my love and activism on behalf. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, they're absolutely amazing creatures, and today I'm actually recording from the field, and I'm off to the Catlands, Slow Point, which is the most southern point in New Zealand, and if I don't make it this afternoon, first thing tomorrow morning at 9 a.m, my intention is to go and swim with the dolphins. And, you know, I've loved these creatures all my life, but it's only last year when I actually saw them firsthand that you really understand what sentient creatures they are. I mean, they're just amazing.
Well, part of my work is to take our human understanding of who they are to the next level that's more in tune with who they really are. And I would never use the word creature to refer to a whale or a dolphin. I use the word fellow beings, because to me, see, this is part of our work. And you might actually enjoy listening to my radio show for tomorrow on UCY-TV, as you asked me about my show. It's called On the Brink Radio. This show is called Staying Sane in La La Land. And I begin to examine a lot of the sort of the insanity, for lack of a better word, that humanity is riddled with at this time. And part of it, some of our most underlying beliefs or meta-beliefs, that our whole notion of civilization and our identity as people rests on, is the assumption that we are somehow above and beyond, superior to, more intelligent than all the other beings, creatures, animals, and everybody else on this planet. And I very much beg to differ with that. What do you reckon?
Well, as I was talking, I was thinking about the story that I was telling you, where in ancient Māori mythology, they have a tale about the kauri tree and the whale, and these two giants of their world, one of the ocean and one of the woods, they had an affinity with each other. So they had this developing relationship where effectively the kauri tree gave the whale its song, so that as the whale was going through the ocean, it could sing and remember its friend, the kauri tree. And the whale in turn gave it its big rough skin so that the kauri tree could wear this cloak. But the thing that's interesting about the mythology is it really, what it's talking about is it's actually talking about warning. The whole story is about warning them of the dangers of humanity and how they're going to take these gifts and actually use them to bring them into the environment to then damage that environment. And it's incredible that a culture that is several thousand years old before our amazing world of technology could forecast this, and they actually seem to have a greater sense of balance and harmony, recognition that they weren't the only species on this planet compared to modern humanity.
Yes. When I recently caught up with my friend Gabby Duncan, he's an elder of the Darkinjung and Gummeroi people of Eastern Australia. He shared with me some stories that his people have been passing down for tens of thousands of years. And I was totally blown away, because these stories verified what I had already intuited and felt and believed about the whales and dolphins, that they not only are people now, in the true sense of the word, and in that true sense may qualify as people to a much higher degree than most humans do now. Not only are they people now and have been recognized as such by many indigenous people, but they've been people a lot longer than us. They were people. They had achieved the level of personhood before our ancestors even sort of like came down out of the trees. They are spiritually and psychically our mentors and helped us to evolve to become what humanity is really supposed to be now. And I think that we've, in our current stage, we've sort of devolved and gotten off the track of what that is.
Well, I would subscribe to that view quite heavily. And one of the things which, you know, I don't like using the word person because in some ways I think, you know, that brings it back to being the like people, I like humans, and God forbid that. But it's what I pick up on the whole situation is that I was doing a psychology degree when I was in the early years in university, and I had a very good psychologist, Dr. Moody, and he turned around to me one day and he said, if a lion could speak English, we still wouldn't understand it because we wouldn't understand its variant of intelligence. So the problem is that we try to make comparisons to all animals on how we deem what classifies as intelligence, but their value system and all the things that they require for the environment mean that I believe that they are intelligent creatures. They have recognition of individuals, they have their own advanced language, they have a social structure, yet, but it doesn't compare to what we're after because, you know, they don't want a 9-to-5 job and to become the CEO of Ocean World Corporation Unlimited.
Exactly. Maybe you could start substituting the word being for creature.
Oh, totally. I mean, I used to phrase sentient being, and, you know, but today we're obviously talking about whales is a big part of what we're talking about, but, you know, we forget there's actually 23 million other species on this planet. We are not the sole landlord, and we act like we have the sole right to do whatever we want, total disregard for all the other species, and it's just total insane arrogance.
It is, and that's putting it far too kindly, but we are unique in that respect. That is what separates us from every other member of our entire family of life. Ben, have you heard an expression from the Lakota Native Americans called Mitukaye Oyasan? It means all my relations or all of every member of my family of life. And I think it's a very powerful concept. When I was recently in Tasmania, I was up at Cradle Mountain playing my shaman drum and my flute and a blinding blizzard, and I went down to Dove Lake and it was like I was really graced with this really beautiful, I'll call it a vision, of it was like all of a sudden in my mind's eye I saw or perceived the totality of every unique individual of every single species of life on this planet as one highly complex and diverse yet unified family of life. And it blew me away. It blew me away to realize that that's all who our fellow passengers, crew of this planet are right now, and including Mother Earth herself.
It's interesting to say that because, I mean, on your site and some of the images I've looked at, I mean, you do this amazing, you know, it's kind of half folk naive art and half kind of shamanic in nature. Your art is absolutely beautiful, and the image we put up for the show was the one of the whales and the dolphins and, you know, all living species and how they're all connected to each other. And, you know, this is the thing which I find interesting about shamanic cultures is that, or indigenous cultures, is that in the West we have a habit of being a little bit silly and finding what, you know, these things which they take as a very common sense and just a way of life, and we put our egos into it, we kind of act like it's special and it's magical, and it's not. It's just the interconnectedness of everything, which they are absolutely in tune to. And it strikes me that shamanic cultures, in some ways, have a better understanding or inherent understanding of metaphysics and concepts like fractals than we do. And we're meant to be the high tech society, but, you know, one of my friends, Jim Weaver, and he uses Aboriginal drums and Tamanic Tibetan the bowls, and, you know, he was the one that pointed out to me that, you know, for years Europeans used to think that all the dots and scratchings that appeared of Aboriginal art was just that, but in actual fact what they discovered was, you know, there was a a map there which denoted the energy lines. There was a map there which denoted the underwater springs and how they're all interconnected. Those springs weren't discovered by Western culture until the mid-1990s, yet the Aborigines knew about them for over 40,000 years ago. It's quite amazing. And you find this when you look at New Zealand mythology, pre-1500s, a lot of this stuff has actually been, A, it's been bastardized, B, it's been politicized, but when you start to go around some of the big museums and you start to look at some of the mythologies there, you start to realize that the culture that existed before the 1500s, and we're talking, you know, Waitahawa, Moriori, depending upon the different indigenous waves that came to New Zealand, these people had intimately clever knowledge of how everything interconnected. The same, the Mayans, when you look at the great sundial, I mean, that is the first human computer. It is an abacus that works not just on a two-dimensional level, but a three-dimensional level. And all these guys had that ability to connect and monitor and see how different geologies connected into each other, what the hell one thing connected. We don't. We are so alienated to our own environment. It's twisted. It's dysfunctional.
Absolutely.
And you know, one of the things I kind of get back into, we'll maybe talk a little bit about the, you know, some of the things which our other species are having to put up with. But one of the things I also find quite interesting was that in the story that I told you about the Kauri tree and the whale, the first thing that's quite interesting was that I kind of got told this by a Māori elder. And in fact, it's not just a Māori elder. There's a whole collection of different people, Aboriginal shamanic cultures all around the world that are in connection with. He told me the story himself, and I thought, yeah, okay, maybe. And it wasn't until I went really dug into ancient Māori mythology that found that connection. Was like, wow, that's, you know, I'd already actually been told that. And then what really blew me away was that you start to discover there's a guitar maker out there. He does a really good TEDx out there on Queensland about the harmonics of Kauri, which is, actually has this very unique pitch, which is, when you hear it, it is very similar to the whale cry. And then when you turn around and you take a bombard the earth from outside so that you can translate that vibration into a sound wave, you end up with a frequency which, again, is not that far away from the whale's frequency. So there's this interconnected sound where they are all running the same code and program. And it's very much a matrix thing. So we're the one that's outside that matrix. And it's not science fiction. We're talking basic physics.
Yes.
You know, the area that you're working on at the moment, I mean, you know, one of the things when I first started contacting you was we were looking at this issue of dolphins and whales doing mass strandings that are washing up on beaches around the world. What are your thoughts on this, Jeff? What do you think's going on?
One of the first things that I always emphasize, especially when talking about this, is that reality is far more complex than our ability to grasp or understand or comprehend or even have the time to even make a step in that direction. And the case with our awareness of cetacean strandings is a perfect example of that complexity. It's a bit inconvenient to have to spend hours and hours just to cover all the bases on what the important dimensions of something are. Our whole mentality is oriented towards sound bites and little bits and pieces digestible things. And so with the strandings, we know from ancient writers that whales and dolphins have always stranded as long as there's been people that we have recorded history from. But no one's ever really known why. And there's probably many different reasons, some of which we understand, some of which we don't. We do know that, as you probably know, that all the whales and dolphins and cetaceans breathe voluntarily rather than autonomically like we do. They take every breath on purpose, consciously. And if they aren't able to breathe, then they would drown in the ocean. And so I think if they actually want to die for whatever reason, there could be reasons we understand and reasons that we don't. And their experience of death, what we call death, may be vastly different from ours. But they might wash up on the beach just so that they can die gradually and peacefully without drowning. But I guess what we're leading up to is that we do know unequivocally that there are very, very grave dangers being inflicted on not only the whales and dolphins, but everybody who lives in the ocean from the direct and indirect side effects of different kinds of technologies that are in use all over the world's oceans, specifically the technologies of the exploitation and extraction of hydrocarbons and also sonars of all different frequencies and intensities, but specifically the mid-range and low-frequency sonars used by the world's navies.
What I find interesting about that, Jeff, is, and I think, first of all, you hit the nail on the head, is that, you know, wherever you find exploitation of the mineral resources, you know, there is a strong correlation. And it's a bit like saying you can't say that cigarette causes cancer, but the correlation is so overwhelming that you can't help but recognize there's a pattern. The second aspect, though, is that, which I think is a little more, what I find is a little bit more interesting, is that there seems to be in New Zealand an almost deliberate pattern to steer people towards thinking that most of these strainings are actually caused by sonar waves. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that this is not actually happening, but the consequences of microwaves or electromagnetic waves has not really been recognized by the active, especially things like, you know, Project Jonah, has not really been recognized by the activist movement involved in rescuing it. But yet, when you read through the oil company's own documentation and you start to look at the key wordings they're using, they are actually in their own documentation, like Stat Oil is a good example, and that's the Norwegian company that's in North Island. They use not just sonar, but they use EMF waves and microwaves as part of their search for oil.
Absolutely. If you listened to or want to listen to three brilliant interviews that I've done with an investigative journalist named Peter Eyre, that's E-Y-R-E. He worked with NATO, with the hydrocarbon industry, with international finance, international security search and rescues in the British Navy on submarines, and knows a lot about depleted uranium. He has a lot of inside information about a lot of this stuff, but he emphasized that, as we know, small versions of HARP are in use everywhere because they're small and mobile. And there's a guy named Brooks Agnew. I don't know if you've heard of him, but you might like to check out his work. He, back in the 1970s, he figured out a way. I think he's an electrical engineer. He figured out a way to take a shortwave radio broadcasting at about 30 watts and beam that signal down into the earth, and then he analyzed the signals that bounced back. And he was able to tell exactly where oil was and the quality of it and the depth and how much there was so efficiently that he was instantly hired by all the major oil companies. And the point he was making is that in order to accomplish this, he only needed a power level of 30 watts.
Exactly.
These systems like HARP, we're talking about billions or hundreds of billions of watts of electromagnetic microwave energy being beamed into the earth, the ionosphere, all through the oceans. I mean, and this is just the stuff we know about.
I mean, I'm really glad that you made the point about the mini harps, because I have a map tucked away in my bookshelf, but I call it the Vision Book of Murder, and wherever I've recorded mass bird deaths, whales, specifically creations, what I find is virtually on like a 9.9% correlation that you will find some EMF, major EMF station, not necessarily HARP, but there is a whole, there's Virginia, the radar arrays up there. You've got the South America, the SAVM network. You've got Scotland, and they crisscross them, and wherever you find them crisscross, they're there, you will find large quantities of mammals and fish dying. Jeff, look, we're just going into the last segment of the last section, so we're just going to take a short break, and then I'll bring you in, and what do you want to talk about in the next section, Jeff?
Well, one of the things we could talk about would be the fraudulent oil and mining companies that are operating out there now.
Okay, well, let's do exactly that. So we'll just take a short break. You're on the Postman Show, care of www.thevincenteastwoodshow.com, and we'll be right back. And you're on the Postman Show, care of thevincenteastwoodshow.com, and our special guest today is Jeff Phillips from... Jeff, I'm out on the field, and I've had a busy day. It's On the Brink Radio?
Yes, on UCY.TV, which is a television station in the Adirondacks in western New York.
And you've got your own website as well, haven't you?
Yes, it's DolphinMatrix.com/Jeff, and it's all lowercase except the J is capital.
So what I want to do is we're going to talk about the forged nature of the oil companies and what they're doing. And what I'd like us to do is maybe talk about that for about 10 minutes, and then I want to focus a little bit kind of go out on a positive note and sort of highlight kind of like, you know, what these species are actually teaching us and how we can potentially change things so that we're not going down the current path of destruction. So on the point of destruction, sorry, Jeff?
We should talk about that for just the whole rest of the show.
Why the hell not? That's a good idea. What I wanted just to very quickly introduce, Jeff, is that last week I had the Wizard of New Zealand on board, and I brought him on delivery because he talks about the concept of the fun revolution, and I believe that activism really needs to change its game. While it becomes about us and them, we are not going to convince anybody of our merits, and we need to start showing people, making this a community thing. And you know, this is what I feel in terms of our fellow seabeeing species. They've got so much to teach us, and they are something that we can benefit from.
Absolutely, and if you don't mind, I'll just take 3 minutes and tell you about the fraudulent oil companies thing. If people are interested, you should listen to the interview with Peter Eyre. But he knows, he's seen this inside from the inside, how it all works and everything. But a lot of these oil companies are they'll go to great lengths. They'll incorporate themselves as a company. They'll see if they can find, for example, an old mine that's been abandoned, or you know, something like that. They might even contract some geophysical exploration companies to go and do a couple of seismic surveys and stuff like that. But what they've done is present all of this really slick PowerPoint presentations and films and meetings with potential investors, and they convince these investors, based on all this basically fraudulent information that they've concocted, they get the investors' money, and then they set about giving the appearance that they're gonna, you know, drill for some oil or mine the gold or something like that. They'll spend a couple of million of the perhaps even billions of dollars of investors' money that they're holding. Then, as time goes by, they start giving reports to the investors like, the political conditions in this country are really bad, and it's been really hard for us to get in there and do anything, or the climate has been changing, you know, the weather pattern's been preventing us from getting any work done. And this sort of dog and pony show will go on for a year or two, and then finally they sort of just like close up shop and say they're sorry to all the investors, but they just walk with all. But that was the plan all along. But apparently, this is just actually rampant. This is rampant.
It's the whole speculative nature of the oil industry, and you know, we have this happening here in New Zealand as well. But you know, at the same time, the frustration is that in the area that I'm going into, the Catlins into Stewart Islands, you know, there's a lot of talk about oil development there, and on Stewart Island, you've got one family, they're in the main restaurant, they're in the main airport, and the drilling's been done on their land, so because they're the big cheese on the island, they're the employers, fishermen...
What is their name?
You know, off the top of my head, I can't actually remember, but if you just Google Stewart Island, there's pretty much only one major restaurant and hotel in the village of Hobart, and if you find them, you'll find the people that I'm talking about. But
is their name Malcolm?
I think it actually is.
Well, you know what? I know who they are.
Just be careful, Jeff, because we in New Zealand, we $250,000 for defamation. So just be cautious what you say, please.
I was just going to say that I was invited to come to their house, but I wasn't able to, because they're apparently a historically known legendary seafaring family.
Oh, they're actually acquiring an incredibly, you know, they've done a lot of good for the island, but unfortunately, they're only seen the short term. And one of the things I did was I came back off Stewart Island and I went by the freighter to where the mussel farm, and I sat there in the very bay that they're going to be, you know, looking at drilling for oil, and they're going to be using fracking technology. And, you know, this is an entire island. Its industry is based on salmon, mussel, oysters, you know, it's seafood. And once they start drilling there, they're going to wipe that income out. And what the people on the island don't realize is they're not going to get any jobs, but they're also going to lose all the money they make from tourism. You know, collectively, it's a bad deal for them.
What? But are you telling me that they're already doing this?
Well, when I went down there last, they had just brought in the exploration well, and they'd actually brought it in without consent. And David Kennedy, I ended up having dinner with him, he was the Green MP down there, and he said, oh, no, they wouldn't do that. And then 3 days later in the newspaper, exactly what I said for him, it was appeared in the newspaper. As I understand it, that things are very complicated, as we just talked about the fortune and nature of oil industry. They took a bit of a pause, but I understand the activity is that it's starting to move on the ground there. And one of the people I'll actually be speaking to when I can get down there is to Dr. Perry, who runs the French Creperie, and she's my little kind of like 007 on the island, and very, very clever lady.
Well, will you please keep me informed about what you find out? Because
most certainly.
If I might go back, in other words, to close on the note of the fraudulent companies, a lot of anybody that's investing in that is on the wrong track anyway. But people have to really beware that that this kind of thing is going on. It's all just this free for all of grabbing anybody's money, and there's no concern about accountability or being held responsible for the consequences of people's actions or decisions. I guess you'd call it fascism.
Oh, totally. And unfortunately, you know, the vast majority of people, you know, it's interesting. I was in the other end of the country. I was in Raglan. And you walk into Raglan, fantastic community. You don't see any McDonald's. You don't see any Burger King. There's good community health gardens. I mean, it's not perfect. You know, there's a like every place you look, you'll find the dark edge. But, you know, I went from that environment where people were talking about, farmers were working next to fishermen and fishermen were working tourism industry. Everybody recognized that the benefits of deep-sea mining was of minimal to zero impact for them. And they were active and they were paying attention and they were learning this stuff. The next moment, I'm in Manawera, which is, you know, it's a kind of the equivalent of South L.A., and, you know, I've been offered drugs three or four times within 5 minutes, and all you can see is McDonald's and Burger King and KFC, and they've got everybody just so fighting for survival that no one can actually realize that they've been drowned.
Yes. Very interesting.
Oh, totally. You know, it's a really interesting concept of how that 1% has us so socially manipulated, but we can't recognize that what we're doing is so short-sighted, and what they term as business or capitalism. It's, you know, it's my father would never, and if he was businessman for 40 years, import export, he would never biz trade like that because it's short-sighted.
Absolutely. Well, look, let's move on to what the whales and dolphins are maybe trying to tell us. If I may share with you.
Most certainly, please do.
I'm the last person to claim that I have any sort of special inside knowledge about what they're trying to tell us. They're not saying anything because they don't speak. They don't use language. It's really inaccurate to talk about decoding whale and dolphin language. Trying to understand with our hearts and minds.
So, Jeff, I just have to stop you there for a second. So there's no backward flips and whistling and so long and thanks for all the fish then?
No.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Sorry, I couldn't resist that one. Sorry, carry on, Jeff. I won't interrupt you. Yeah, you're saying about the language?
That's totally inaccurate to say that we're gonna decode their language or anything like that, but you form an impression from being with them, but more than being with them, tuning into the wavelengths of their being. And it's like I was saying before, the indigenous people of Australia, and I felt this, that the whales and dolphins have, they're very powerful psychic and spiritual beings, and they've been, they have abilities that are light years beyond us in terms of using our own advanced internal technology, our own extremely sophisticated neurobiology, of which theirs is more sophisticated than ours. And they've had their really large and sophisticated nervous systems than we've even existed.
I think you're correct, and it's interesting too, because the, you know, I think about this, and it's like, back in early shamanic areas, you had things like the Scottish people, and they use all their systems, which were called like things like the Frith. You know, we can put all sorts of names, ESP, telepathy. All these people were doing was they were very in tune with their natural environment, because instead of watching TV, instead of watching Facebook, instead of getting all these distractions, which we're completely surrounded by, all they had to look at was this great big huge computer called the sky. And this is what, you know, look, the thing about things like whales and dolphins, and more, you know, my viewpoint is more whales than dolphins, because I definitely recognize that the whale brain is so much more sophisticated and complicated than the human brain. But their understanding of their environment is just amazing, and you just have to hear the song and then hear it being repeated in the harmonics of our own planet to realize that these guys are onto something, and we need to shut up and listen. Are you there, Jeff? Have you come back on board?
I never left.
Oh, sorry, I just wasn't getting your feedback. Sorry, we were saying?
I was saying that their whole perception of reality is vastly different from ours. We can't pretend to know what it's like without becoming them.
Right.
But we can make educated guesses. But what I was going to share with you is that, and these two things I'm going to share relate to each other, the Hopi Native Americans from Arizona have had these prophecies that have been passed down for many thousands of years, and they're expressed in this really powerful nonverbal film called Koyaanisqatsi, which is a Hopi word that means crazy life or life out of balance, that describes the period of time that we're going through now that industrial civilization is creating, that we're a part of. So this main prophecy says, if we dig precious things from the land, we will invite disaster. And this includes, we were never meant to mine out anything. I don't even think stone. Stone, gold, coal, iron, hydrocarbons, uranium. Look at what we've done with this. Look at the implications of the existence and the mobilization and the concentration and the redistribution of all these substances and the side effects and everything. And it's like a form of warfare. And so I want to relate this to the fact that the Earth is, of course, a planet in the solar system around a star with other planets, and we exist in a vast cosmic context. When people say, oh yeah, we should really go to space, we need to go into space, they're going, look, where are we already? We're in space. Where else could we? Earth is in space. We don't need to go to space. The Earth is the ultimate spaceship. So anyway, there's lots of evidence, both cultural and geological, that the Earth has been bombarded or undergone very severe cataclysms and catastrophes regularly throughout her entire life, up to and including the times when people have existed and were able to record about it. And it's my feeling that the whales and dolphins have memories and ancient knowledge and stories about these things that the Earth has gone through. I think one of the aspects of their more highly evolved nervous systems is they have a much vaster memory than we do.
I think you're actually absolutely correct, and it's also interesting because I'm trying to think of the scientific word, but there's the part of the brain which I think they call, it's referred to saying as the hippopotami, and the gist of it is that if you have an undeveloped hippopotami, it limits your ability to remember your past. And if you can't remember your past, you aren't able to see what your future is going to be. And when you look at, for example, the whales, the hippopotami in a whale is actually way superior than human beings. And they have a memory system which is, you know, I won't even begin to say it's better or superior, because that's the wrong word to use for what they have.
It's beyond us in terms of their use of biological technology. But if I might interrupt, my feeling is that not only do they have far more advanced and powerful memories than us, their ability for real-time instantaneous communication multidimensionally with each other, with us, with Mother Earth, possibly with even extraterrestrial sources of energy and information. But if I could just get to the exact thing I was leading to, my basic feeling from my interaction with whales and dolphins in recent years is that they are imparting a warning to us, a sense of urgency, a warning to me as I'm trying to understand this in my own being. I feel that they're trying to warn us about an impending planetary level catastrophic event or process that they can see, they can sense on their horizon somehow, that's invisible to us. It's invisible to us. It's not even on our radar. It's not even something that we've ever even thought of or conceived of. But they can see it coming.
There's two things here, Jeff. Is that number one, and I just wanted to interject, because if you think, oh, no, that wouldn't happen. So, well, you know, there's huge documented history of whales and dolphins actually going out of the way for no purpose. There's nothing that they achieve out of it, to constantly rescue human beings or interact in a way that's only beneficial to human beings. So that alone blows me away. I also think you're quite correct. They pick up on, you know, because they can see, read the planet in a way that we can't. One question for you. When you talk about the interdimensional connection and the rest of it, do you wouldn't know by any chance at what speed the brain patterns of a whale thinks at by any chance, do you?
Well, I don't think it's accurate to talk about the speed at which someone thinks. What we could talk about is the various frequencies of the electroencephalographic brain waves that are measured and stuff like that. I would guess, I haven't seen any specific information, but I'm sure it might be there. My guess would be that the basic brain wave rhythms would be quite similar to ours. You know, the alpha frequency is very similar to what they call the Schumann resonance, like 7.86.
Oh, exactly, which is that what we're talking about with the whales and the curry tree. But the reason why I ask is that the human brain actually, it travels at 1/16th the speed of light, and it travels at a trillion neurons simultaneously at any given moment. I suspect from looking at, you know, and I'm not a biologist, but looking at the whale, especially the larger species, I would suspect that their thought patterns could actually be quite a bit faster. And the thing is, once you start getting to that realm, you start getting to some very interesting abilities to actually physically adapt your metaphysics. And this is totally way out there. Let's turn around and say, hey, wait a minute, maybe whales aren't, UFOs aren't UFOs. Maybe they're just actually the whales doing a little bit of thought projection. And all that's way out there, but just, it suddenly occurred to me, we've maybe been looking at this whole situation wrong all these years, and we're not looking at something from outer space. Maybe we're looking at something that comes from this planet being projected out there.
Yes, and it could be projected by DARPA.
Oh, totally. This is very, very left field and far further than I normally ever go. But when I went to visit Tani Mahuta up in Northland, what actually happened was the moment I got out of Tani Mahuta, not once, not twice, but three times, UFOs actually buzz right across me at that very moment. And, you know, I'm not saying anything. It just occurs to me that the whales are, you know, we need to listen. We need to stop thinking we're the superior creatures and realize there are other cultures and species that have been around a lot longer, and they've got something to tell us.
Yes, well, Dr. John Lilly said that he felt that the whales and dolphins were acting as repeater stations for signals from water-based life on other planets and other star systems. And they could be dialed into the whole global body of the ocean, which water functions as one giant macromolecule. So in effect, the world's ocean is like one giant crystal of water. Water has very unique properties. They may be transducing energy and information from different places, different dimensions that we just have no... It's like we're a part of it, but we don't...
We've got 20 seconds, and we're going to have to wind up. But would you be willing to come back on the show at some stage?
Absolutely. Just let me know.
Well, look, I want to explore this, and I want to go and do some real good, gnarly research, because, you know, what we're just doing today is, it's not about reporting or telling a story. It's about this amazing concept called free thinking, exploring possibilities, because it's just interesting to do so. Thank you very much, Jeff Phillips from On the Brink Radio, or sorry, On the Brink TV. This is Ben Vigen reporting for The Postman Show. And everybody, good night and good luck.